Coming Home, a podcast with Lane Kennedy.
Welcome back, you guys. So grateful to be with you today. This episode is really juicy. It's so delicious. And I kind of went a little, I don't know, this is like one of my favorite teachers. So I think you might hear that. I kind of got a little, I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Let's get into the episode. Okay.
Welcome back. All right, you guys, how are you today? Another beautiful day. Thank you for coming back and joining me and another lovely guest. Oh, so excited to share this fabulous woman with you today. This was my touchstone into Nidra, listening to this voice that you are going to hear today. She was the doorway that I walk through. And so I'm really just feeling so blessed to be able to share her with you guys and to get into a juicy conversation. This is Tanis Fishman. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Lane. It's such a pleasure to finally connect with you. And I'm excited just to have a rich, authentic conversation.
Yes. Yeah. It's so interesting when I look at you, like when we lie our bodies down and we listen to somebody, right? Like from YouTube or from Insight Timer, we have no idea what they look like. I don't, at least, right? And so for many months, a year, like I had no idea what you look like mm-hmm. at all, right? I just heard the voice. And so to actually have eyes and a smile is like, it's so nice. It's so awesome.
There's a human there.
Yes, there's a human. It's really, it's so empowering. And I want to start off the conversation, as I do with every conversation, in letting our listeners get to know you. Really, I want to hear, like, what, before Yoga Nidra happened in your life, what were you like?
So I'll go back. I came into Yoga Nidra in my 20s, in my early 20s in India. And before that, I grew up as with an identity of an athlete and very competitive athlete. So I think my parents put me in ski racing when I was 3, and then I started racing at 5. Yeah, five.
What?
Yes. And that was really so much of my childhood and my adolescent experience was this world of racing and competition and I knew something in me, I knew how to race. I had this ability to just turn on race days mm-hmm. and feel the energy of competition. And so that was, yeah. So I grew up really with a competitive mind state, and mm-hmm. yet something so deep in me knew that there was another way. Mm-hmm. It was like this tiny flicker, this flame of hope that there was mm-hmm. that there was another way to be in this world and to see things differently than that. And so even though it wasn't really reinforced or encouraged around me, I mean, I was surrounded by athletes and my mentors, and my guidance system were my coaches who, they weren't really concerned with my mental space or my inner peace, it was really about skiing as fast as possible. And so, yeah, I grew up in a very competitive environment, and surrounded with that consistent message. Mm-hmm. and yet feeling really disoriented, really mm-hmm. lost. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was, I think, 4 years old, my parents were having a gathering or a party at their house, and I was looking around and I was hearing the adult conversations, and this was at 4 years old, and I remember thinking, there's got to be more than what's going on here. And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't really articulate how dissatisfied I was with what I was experiencing, but there was a huge disconnect in me from the just the social world of what was going on, and where I thought, or what I thought I should be feeling mm-hmm. in connection with the social world. Mm-hmm. And yet deep inside of my core, I just knew something, there's other ways to navigate this, and there's something else going on mm-hmm. that's much larger than this. And I had that inside of me, yet it was very covered by layers and layers of this very competitive upbringing and lifestyle mm-hmm. and the life of an athlete, really focused on skiing. Mm. And so that was my life. But yet I remember I couldn't, there were moments where I couldn't wait to finish skiing, and then I could go, and I had such a strong desire to go to just places where people weren't so fixated on, say, the material world, but more now the like really sacred sites. I guess I was drawn to sacred sites my whole life. I just wanted to go and sit in different places that had really strong energy, and mm-hmm. I don't know why, I couldn't explain it, but that mm-hmm. was, yeah, I yearned for that, even while I was in the very strong morphic field of competition and skiing, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I had these tiny whispers of there's something else out mm-hmm. there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going back to 5-year-olds, competitive sports, what you're thinking at five, like, right? Like looking up at your parents thinking there's something not, this is something else here. Something else has gone, like there's a puzzle piece missing. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like, and then having this strong pull to go sit in beautiful places or majestic, have majestic moments somewhere. Like your soul, it's like, I'm hearing your soul talk.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. I'm hearing the soul lead you through this trying time. And eventually you got out of the competitive skiing, I'm assuming.
I did. Yeah. One other thing too. Well, it was like that. Mm-hmm. I was guided, you mm-hmm. know, the whole time that I was really like in that strong environment, I was guided. I remember at age 15, I gravitated towards meditation. Mm-hmm. I found some DVDs.
Back in the day.
With meditation. And there was something so hopeful in that for me. Like I just to sit and do nothing and be so quiet was something. Yeah, it's just, I remember it awakened this sense of hope in me. And yeah. So that was 15. I found meditation before mm-hmm. I even really found. Then I later found the yoga practice. But yeah, meditation was really my first link into understanding the larger field. Mm-hmm. But then at 19, I had a really powerful year at 19. Our ski team was in a really horrific car crash. And that experience actually was in a sense very enlightening. It was horrific on the human plane. And then yet I shifted states of consciousness, and it that was where actually I had that, mm-hmm. That very tangible experience that we're living in different frequencies. And so I came out of my body and saw the scene and realized that I was still aware. I was aware, and yet I wasn't in the awareness that I was a second ago. And that was a very life-changing experience on many levels, but that gave me the taste that it is true. Everything that I thought growing up, that we're not seeing it all, we're not experiencing it all. And then that was it came in a very strong, impactful way on the human plane, but immediately, spontaneously shifted states of consciousness. And then after that experience, I had a contract with the ski team, so I had to finish skiing. And I remember, like, that competitive drive in me was just done. Nothing motivating me to, you know, what maybe was fueling my competitive edge before, comparing myself, that just died. It wasn't to be better than somebody else, to be the best. That just wasn't, that completely sizzled inside of me. And so I wanted to be more of service and support and help, as opposed to fuel my own need for accomplishment. And so I was skiing one day. I wasn't actually supposed to be skiing this day, but I went out and first run out, I tore my knee. This was my second ACL tear, and I just tore it, and I knew, and I blessed it and said, thank you. The only way out of my contract was a physical injury. And that was the ending of my ski career and the beginning really of my spiritual path.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so, I love how the universe works, right? Like, you're done.
I'm done. Was it? Done.
Yeah, you're done. And this is how we're going to close it out. It's going to hurt a little bit, but you're going to recover and you're going to go into the next chapter.
Absolutely.
So good. So good. Absolutely. And so you're in, like, you're healing from, you know, this tear in your knee, and you go back to your meditation. How did you, like, find yourself?
So I was in physical healing recovery.
And then
this was when I was 19, and I knew I had no desire to jump into the next schooling. I just, you know, I finished high school at age 18 and then was still racing. And I had this yearning. I wanted to go to, my dream was to actually go to Jerusalem first. I wanted to go to Israel. I wanted to be where people were living their truth, whatever that looked like. They're walking around in their, I wanted to go to, like, the most religious place that, you know, I knew of. And and I do have my Jewish roots. My dad was Jewish. My mom was Catholic and converted. They absolutely did not press religion on our family, and we grew up very, very secular. We celebrated every holiday, and we lived, it was just to celebrate and for tradition in terms of bringing the family together. But there was no religion press on us at all. So when I told my parents I wanted to go to Israel, they like flipped. They they had no real idea of where this yearning would come from, because it wasn't part of our upbringing. And and so I wanted to be around people and in space where they weren't trying to accomplish anything or do something, or but it was to be in the presence of the divine. And I wanted to go sit in those spaces, and I wanted to be near those people. And I remember when I first made it to Jerusalem, it was like a homecoming, because I was, you know, people were walking around in their truth, whatever, not the, it, their, you know, whatever truth it was, mm-hmm. they were living it and they were dressing in their truth, mm-hmm. And they were not afraid to live in their truth. And for me, that was like, I needed to go there. I needed to be there. It was like if a surfer needs waves in an ocean, I needed to go sit in these secret spaces. It was like this need inside of me. Like I had been so disconnected from that for so long, and I needed to go fill it up in some way. So I went to Israel, I went to Jerusalem, and I went traveling and I went to Egypt, and yeah, I just needed to reconnect with these sacred sites that somewhere in me, it was a homecoming when I went there. Mm-hmm. My mind wasn't able to totally place the experience, but my innermost core, my soul was like, we made it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I totally relate to what you're talking about. It's so, when the soul is calling, it's like, we have to go. We have to go.
Yeah.
And it happens over and over. It's not like it's, you go once and then you're done.
No.
Right? Like, we're on this soul journey. And I share that because a lot of times I think people just think, oh, I'm just going to do this for a little while, mm-hmm. or I'm just going to go and I'm going to do that and I'm going to be fulfilled. Yeah. And I truly believe that the soul just keeps evolving, right? We keep turning, we keep growing, we keep seeing, we keep becoming that true self. And so what I'm hearing on your journey is that you are just like being like, I'm just like, you're just basking in it, right? You're just like, yeah, your soul is just like, oh, this is so good. And I can just see your little spirit, like these people, you know, in Jerusalem, oh, ding, 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 right? Just lighting you up. And so here you are traveling and going to these sacred sites, and you fell into yoga, I'm guessing.
So that was like the first wave. Like you just said, it's you get the call,
and
I had to listen.
Yeah.
And that was, that was really, I guess, opening me more up from more into an expansive, mm-hmm. I had more expansiveness of that there's this field, this universal field, and we're all connected. And that there's so many different ways that humans are trying to connect into it. And that was really that my travel for a year was we're these human beings, mm-hmm. That in some way feel like we have this yearning, and it looks different for everyone. And for some people it looks more obvious, like we're really yearning for that connection. And for others, it's really masked with different ways, but there's this deep yearning in us to connect to something that we can't even explain. Mm-hmm. And I just needed to be around those people that were more obvious with it. Mm-hmm. That was my trip.
Yeah.
And then after that, I came back and I was studying at university. I had no idea really what I wanted to study. I thought, well, I'll study the body since we're with it all the time, so I might as well study it. And so I went into what was called human kinetics, and then it became kinesiology. Mm-hmm. And so I started studying the body. But I was so, there was again these questions kept arising, like, well, where does it all come from? And how is it so intelligent that it just does what it does? And like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I wanted to know the creator. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know, like, what is it that creates the body? I need to know this. And I would ask, and no one could tell
me.
No one could tell me. And then this is where the next wave comes in, is I was at university and I was supposed to be in a class and I missed it because there was a visiting Swami that came to our school. And I just knew, I didn't even know what the word really Swami was or who a Swami was. But I had to, something walked me into that, where he was giving his lecture, and I sat down, and from the very moment he started speaking, you know those times where it's like everything dims down, and he is speaking right to me.
Yep.
And the very first thing he started talking about was consciousness, and I said, oh, for fuck's sake, finally. Like, here we go. His whole thing was on consciousness, and I was like, well, how is it that I've been at university for this long studying the body and not one professor has mentioned the word consciousness? Mm-hmm. And he was talking about consciousness and these different koshas that is like sort of nesting dolls over our Atman, our soul energy, and we're this individual expression of this unified field. And I said, like, every single thing he said, it was like I was waiting my entire life for that lecture. Mm-hmm. And he spoke about awareness, and and then at the very end of the of his lecture, I walked up to him and I said, I need to go wherever you're from. Mm-hmm. I need to go, and I need to study this. And then he said he came from a very traditional ashram in India called the Bihar School of Yoga, and that they do accept international students. And he said, you know, the ashram life isn't for everyone. And I said, don't worry, it doesn't even matter. I have to go. Like, I don't even know what an ashram is, but I have to go. And then that was the beginning of the second wave. And so to go to this ashram, you really had to want it, because everything you wrote them, and then through mail, they would write you back, but it was like 6 months later that they wrote back, and then you would write them again. And so by the time it all was arranged in the communication and they accepted me as a student, it was about a year. And then that's when, and I just went, I didn't even know where it was. It was in Bihar. And I remember I was on the airplane flying beside this Indian man. And he was like, you can't go to Bihar by yourself. You can't go. And it was like nothing. That's when you know, because there was no conversation. There was nothing that was going to stop me from going. Yep. And I didn't even do any research on it. I had no idea. I just had to go. And then that was where I received for the very first time the practice of yoga nidra. And that was as part of their yogic lifestyle and schedule. It was a daily class that we were experiencing as part of our the yogic lifestyle course that I was in there. And that was my entry point in.
You're young going into this.
So I was 23. Yes, you know, that's a really, I was very young. And and I'm just, it's like, now that I'm 40, 41, I think I came to it at such a young age, and I had no idea what was at my fingertips.
Yeah.
No idea what I had come into. And, and that's just the time, you know, that's how it happened in my life. And that was the timing of it. Where I just had, I mean, I had a sincerity and a reverence for it, but no understanding, zero. zero understanding that I was exposed to such an incredible wisdom teaching. Like there was such an ignorance in me, like a very innocent ignorance.
Right.
Yeah. Like a beautiful, innocent ignorance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long were you with the ashram? How long were you there studying?
So I was there for about a year, and then I traveled throughout India after that. Mm-hmm. And so I practiced yoga nidra there every day while I was there. Mm-hmm. The very first practice I had was one of my, because I had no expectations whatsoever, I lied down, I had no idea what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And I completely shifted into a most expansive state. Yeah. And I thought I died. I couldn't locate myself, yes. You know, the I-ness, and I died. And so I had no idea. And I came out of that, and I remember everyone was just packing up their stuff and leaving. I was like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. I completely shifted. And then, that was the moment where something, this seed was planted in me. I knew that I was going to study that. Mm-hmm. I knew. I had so much curiosity around it and zero understanding. And that just stayed in me. And then after that, I actually fell asleep. I fell asleep probably for five months straight. Mm-hmm. Every single time I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Until I had the realization that I could make a choice to stay present. And that was really big. Because I would lie down and I was like, well, let's just see. I have no idea what's going to happen. Let's just see 50-50 here. And then I realized that this is a practice where I can make a conscious intention to stay present. Mm-hmm. And then that's going to make me more accident prone to shift into this nidra state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. I mean, you said so much. And I'm just want to travel back to walking in and hearing the Swami. And I talk a lot about frequency. Mm-hmm. And the tone of which people speak and live. And very rarely do I connect. It's like I'm playing this, like I want to catch the frequency. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like I want to get right in there with someone else. And when I do, I'm like, oh my God, thank you. Mm-hmm. Right? Like it's this sense of awe. And so I'm just, again, I'm imagining you walking up and being like, I need to go where you're at. Like, I need to go, because you felt that. You felt it. It hit you. It hit your soul. It was the message. Yeah. Right. And then when you're talking about doing this first nidra and like you're dying, you die.
Right. You died.
Right. Right. Like, what just happened to me? I always say like the nidra like gently takes us apart, and then we're allowed to reshape and reshift, and we're put back together in a very holistic way. And I can't, like, it happens for me, it can happen like on a week to week basis. And I'm always so surprised. Honestly, I'm always like, it just happened again. Yay. And then there's times when I'm doing the nidras where it's just, I'm in like, okay, I'm just going to go to sleep now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like that's such a healing part of the practice as well. Mm-hmm. And I think some people kind of overlook that maybe. But I feel like both going into that deep state and just letting the body rest are so important. And so when we're talking about the practice of yoga nidra, mm-hmm. let's get into that for a minute.
Sure.
Because there's so many parts to it. And you talked about the different koshas and the bodies. And ladies,
Just so you know, there's a free app that you can listen to. Make sure to jump over to lanekennedy.com and grab it and start listening to some incredible, incredible teachers. Okay, let's get back to the show.
There's so much we're getting right now from Tanis. I hope you understand. So I hope you're listening very closely.
Oh, and when, sorry, just to go back, like just, so when the Swami was speaking, I think what hit me was that, so for most of my life up until that point, through communication, everyone's speaking through the filter of their ego. They're speaking, their words are coming from the egoic sense of I-ness, the personal sense of I-ness. So when he started speaking, I could sense, and I mean, I didn't understand what was happening. I sensed it was not coming from the place that everyone else is coming from. Yeah. It's coming from the larger witness, or the awareness is speaking, and it's speaking through, you know, it's his own unique words and his, that's, you know, the sound, but it wasn't, it was like coming from the space behind the density mass of his belief systems. And so that's what I recognized immediately, not understanding that.
Right.
But that it hit me so hard because it just was coming from that spaciousness as opposed to the dense I-ness that everyone speaks from.
And had you heard it before?
Not really. No. Yeah,
right.
No, I had not heard it before. Mm-hmm. But there was something so familiar in it as well, even though I had never really heard that.
Yep.
Yeah.
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 So good. It's so good. It's so good when we like can identify it and be like, I gotta just keep going to that. It's like the flashlight, right? You just gotta follow that flashlight in the dark house. You gotta keep walking. Just gotta keep going. Okay. So I want to get into this, the parts of the practice, because again, people fall out of the practice. They go to sleep in the practice. But there's one part, excuse me, that I think is epic. And that's, all parts are epic. But the part that I love the most is the Sankalpa. Mm-hmm. This is the part, and I want to hear like your take on Sankalpa and what it means to you.
Okay. So this is one of those concepts that I'm constantly understanding and looking at differently, and I explain it differently all of the time. So today this is what you get. Sankalpa at Sankalpa is a, during the practice, we have an opportunity to make an active choice, an active will, an active wish, an active choosing. And that is gigantic, because when you look at how the human body is designed, it's designed for survival. And so, even though we think we're choosing, making choices every day, it's very much like when we're in our ordinary waking state or our ordinary mind, because the human design is so intelligent, we can survive and live without needing to really make any new choices. We've been downloaded our manual, and these belief systems that we're downloaded with become what fuel our thought forms, and we're acting on our thought forms. And it's such a subtle level of attention that we don't catch it all the time. So we're in automatic pattern based on what we have experienced before. And it's a really intelligent design for survival. Yeah, we're also wired for transcendence. And this is huge. We have this ability to transcend what is our human survival manual. And not many of us know this, and not many of us use this. So Sankalpa, how do we transcend this, the survival thought form manual, or what has been encoded already into us, is that when the body is in a state of total relaxation and rest, and the body is the body represents our subconscious mind. So our body is the denser manifestation of our mental space. And so when the body is totally relaxed, the mind, the gates of the doors of the mind, the deeper mind open, and we have access into it. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we actually are on the cusp of choice. Mm-hmm. At the very, very, very deepest, place of intention. It's what, when we intend, we are directing and moving consciousness in a certain pattern, in a certain way, but we're getting to that moment where we're directing the consciousness, which is like unbelievable. That's huge. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, when it's so quiet, we can make a choice, mm-hmm. a real choice. And we can make that choice based on our present day awareness of, because in childhood, when so many of our programmed living codes were downloaded, we haven't really listened to the words of the urge of the soul or the depth of the heart, or we're just trying to orient ourselves here, where are we, right? And we're downloading also what has come before. Mm-hmm. Our seven generations of our ancestral line is coming with us. Mm-hmm. We're coming in with homework. And so the Sankalpa space is just so sacred, because it's now we have an opportunity to really co-create. We can co-create with the divine intelligent plan. And so this Sankalpa can be any area in your life that you want to bring attention to. And like planting a seed deep into the fertile soil, it's going to bloom and blossom and awaken into already what is encoded there, but through our automatic or habitual living, or just continuing maybe what is the unconscious living stream of our ancestral line, that potential may not get awakened in this lifetime. And so with the Sankalpa, we can nurture the area of our consciousness more mindfully. And so Sankalpa can be in the area maybe of health, of relationship, of career, of a project or a vision that is wanting to be birthed. It could be direction in your spiritual practice. It could be what I've been really focused on in the last few years, is just really looking at some inner qualities, maybe that, I are in my higher self is holding for me, but my lower self hasn't quite embodied. Mm-hmm. And now I'm really seeing that these are needs in childhood, actually, that weren't met.
Okay. I gotta just go in deep on that one.
Okay. Yeah. So that's where I'm at right now.
So let's what is that? Because, what is that Sankalpa for you? What is that that you are in right now, this part of the last couple of years, what are you using the Sankalpa to change, right? Because this is a transformative tool, right? It is that door that opens up the messaging to the soul. So what is that? What are you right now? What are you experiencing in your practice that you are asking the Sankalpa to transform in you?
Wow, this is really big right now. To be honest, I would have never in a million years really thought that this would be happening right now. So I'll give you just a leeway. So, I'm going to try and articulate this as efficiently as I can because it's pretty big. The fact that I grew up with my beloved parents, and I believe that I did choose them. Mm-hmm. And here was this child that had really big questions, and these parents that really, they had no idea mm-hmm. how to answer these, so they really brushed them off. But because of that, I grew up feeling very disconnected and mm-hmm. very disoriented, and so my quest, this yearning for my answers to, or for my questions to be at least addressed in some way, or at least heard, mm. you know, that was really the beginning of my spiritual path, because I was asking these big fundamental, these are the existential questions of like, who am I and why am I here? Mm. And what is all this? And what is life? And those were my questions that my parents absolutely could not answer. Mm-hmm. And that they weren't asking those questions. They were not asking those questions. So I grew up very disconnected. And then my Sankalpa, when I came into Yoga Nidra, it was really around spiritual attributes. I really wanted to awaken. And then when I was 23 or 24, and I was back in India, I actually had a spontaneous awakening. And so you could call that the realization of that Sankalpa, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Where it was an awakening, and it was a full-blown awakening for 4 days. And then slowly I started to come back into a sense of I-ness, but it didn't, my sense of I-ness or my ego didn't ground until a whole other year later. Mm-hmm. But then after that, my Sankalpa changed, and it was, I wanted to awaken Kundalini energy. And then I wanted to work on connecting with my higher self. And it was really this yearning for my higher self. Mm-hmm. That was my Sankalpa for a very long time. And then...
And the Sankalpa stays with you, right? It's not something that we change every day.
No. The Sankalpa, right. It's not like I wake up in the morning and what's my intention for the day.
Right.
Sankalpa is like, it goes in so deep that it's like a force. It's a strong but silent force inside that is like a GPS system that's mm-hmm. guiding you. Mm-hmm. So when we're choice makers in every moment, we're always making choices, often very unconsciously. But when if we're navigating through this life experience, and how do you know which way to turn? How do you know where to go? How do you know what to say yes or no to? How do you know? And this is, I see this as like the Sankalpa is that silent force inside that is a gentle guide. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it keeps that, it's a force. So it's broadcasting mm-hmm. A signal into the field that is also aligning life in specific ways so that it's synchronizing events. It's like your personal will aligned with the universal will. And one thing I want to point out is that when it's for highest good for yourself and highest good for others. Mm-hmm. That's the right ingredient.
Yeah.
When it's really, if it's destructive, the universal will not align with it.
Right.
When it's for highest good and it's to elevate the whole conscious field, then get ready, because synchronicities are going to start to happen and flow, and life is going to guide you. We cannot choose the details. Mm-hmm. That we can't. Mm-hmm. We can't choose the timing.
No.
But we can choose the Sankalpa, mm-hmm. and then we surrender it to the universal will and see the miraculous play of life unfold. And so now my Sankalpa has, I really had to kind of wheel it in around motherhood, because it's like I got away with certain things with my older son. Just our energy together, I was able to navigate motherhood in a way that, with some still unconscious parenting going on, and we made it, you know, he's now 9 and we made it there. My little one came on like a firecracker. His name is Moses, and he chose his name and gave it to a friend of mine in her dream space. And Moses was a consciousness shifter. Uh-huh. You know, he walked around the tribe of the Israelites in the desert for 40 years to change their consciousness so that they couldn't enter into the land of freedom with the same outdated consciousness when they were slaves. So my little Moses came in to completely shift my consciousness.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get away with what was, you know, I could kind of keep it at bay and keep going, and know it was there. No, this little one came in and was like, we're going to pull all that from the basement. We're going to pull it all up now, and we're going to look at it, and now it's your time. And so motherhood just threw me, I got destroyed. Mm-hmm. When he was born, I got destroyed. Mm-hmm. And so my Sankalpa, you know, connecting to my higher self at that time, it was like, I need to survive. And what I realized was that there were certain emotional states that my little one was triggering in me. So I was actually like throwing tantrums at the same time he was. So I was this 4-year-old throwing the tantrum, and he was the 2.5-year-old, and you know, you try to run a household and parent in that, and it's devastating. You can't. So I had to look at what needs were unmet in childhood, mm-hmm. That this little one is helping me get closer to. And so I had to use my Sankalpa now to go back into the very human landscape, mm-hmm. and see. And it's been crazy, because what actually, this is a very, very current or fresh experience that happened, but my Sankalpa was really working with I am. First, it was like, I am awakening to my needs. Mm. I'm awakening to my needs, because I didn't even know what my needs were.
Right.
Because they weren't, my crucial ones, like from the get-go in childhood, were not met. So the way that the system is so intelligently designed is that it makes sense of that. So I developed some mental programming around my needs aren't important. They don't really matter. Mm. And it's all good. And that was like, that became my personality. No, it's all good. Everything's all good. And I had no idea what my needs were. And then later on, you know, it wasn't all good, because there's this disconnect. It's an incongruent inner state.
Yep.
And so I could see how I was so yearning for my higher self, because you know, the lower self was being denied.
Yeah.
And so what, when I said I'm awakening to the needs, I've actually, and then you stay open because you don't know what's going to happen. And what happened was, through synchronistic events, one of my dear friends who is a facilitator, a breathwork facilitator, I did some strong practices with him, and I was brought back to that moment of being in room space and realizing actually that there wasn't a conscious choice to be chosen. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't a sense of belonging, and so that very core need to belong and to feel and to know that actually your life has been chosen consciously. Mm-hmm. That's a deep need. And to, my mom was in a very overwhelmed state at birth. She also, my sister was one, mm-hmm. and I know like to be in that. Mm-hmm. So I saw through that experience also that her heart energy was blocked. She was in a stress state.
Yeah.
So the heart energy actually didn't flow into me. So there was no feeling of being nurtured or receiving affection. And so that's very, very core basic needs and not being seen and acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And so when I said to the, when I put the sankalpa in, I'm ready now to awaken to what my needs are. Mm-hmm. It brought me into that experience to see actually what needs were not met. And now in my sankalpa, so I receive that information in my sankalpa. Now I'm working with, I am acknowledged. I am awakened to the heart energy. I am awakened to the feeling of being nurtured.
Mm.
I am chosen. So that's very, very human.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's necessary in order for it's what places of my consciousness were still in the dark.
And so I just want to tap on this, the I am statement, right? And this is, you have Moses, mm-hmm. who has completely rocked your world, right? Like, let's just open this up and shift this consciousness, right? Like, and again, the universe has such a way of changing everything. Mm-hmm. And we're not ready, right? Like, we're like, okay, we're just living life. And then boom, you know, we're pregnant and having a kid and like, oh my God. But what I love about this is just what I hear is the awareness, right? The awareness of changing and shifting the sankalpa because you needed more. And this is what I want to share with the listeners of how in my own parenting, I mean, I talk about this all the time, how this practice has changed my parenting. I mean, I think I'd be locked up if I didn't have yoga nidra. And I that's no,
I completely agree.
Yeah. No joke here, ladies. And so like my sankalpa is very similar to this. Like, I go into this place of, I am parenting. I am a parent. I am holistic. It's changed over the last like maybe 9 months around my parenting. Mm-hmm. And it's just like you, like, wasn't chosen, wasn't connected, wasn't in that love space, right? So it's an opportunity for me to give my soul, right, to reconnect with my soul. You guys, I can't believe I'm saying this on the show. Here I am, woo-woo land. Okay, so, but the thing is that the sankalpa has allowed, and what I'm hearing from you also, Tanis, is that it allows us to not only reconnect with our soul, but it allows us to step into this greater awareness of our consciousness, of our growth, right? To be living a better human experience. Because I'm going to be walking around on this plane dealing with other humans and raising another human, right? So this kind of spiritual tool, because that's how I see it as a very impactful spiritual tool, because it's working on my spirit when I'm in that very magical state. Mm-hmm. The Sankalpa allows me to change my being, right? Yes. So I can live in this human world as a happy mom.
Yes.
As a mom who can be present.
Yes.
Right? Like, that was not what I signed up for.
Yes.
Right? And I don't think, you probably weren't thinking that either. Like,
So a few things come to me right in this moment, actually. I just like made sense of something. So I want to dearly thank you for that. It just like, as I was listening to you, it just came in. Two things, actually. So actually, I'll say the one thing after. But yeah, so around parenting, because I needed like something very concrete to anchor into in the turbulence of motherhood. And so, but where I was so disconnected from the mother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So even just to look at, I was disconnected to my mother because her heart energy wasn't running mm-hmm. then. But then I also saw the whole lineage of her mother and her mother and her mother and her mm-hmm. mother. And that was like a theme running throughout. So even though I'm somewhat, you know, an aware person and I've been studying, this for the last 15 years, but you would think, oh yeah, you'll be a great mother, right? Because you study all this and you do this. But I'm still, I'm coming down the pipes of what was before me. And there was that disconnect in the mother archetype. Mm-hmm. So I just, after I sort of went through my survival mode, then I started to see, wow, there's a disconnect at the very deepest part of the mother. Mm-hmm. And so when I was also working with Sankalpa, I started to say, I am a mother. Mm-hmm. I am a mother. Mm-hmm. And all the attributes and the inner qualities that come with that archetype, I am ready to awaken inside myself because I did not receive it or learn it through my lineage.
Right.
And so the Sankalpa for me was starting to awaken the mother archetype inside. And then where it can go is once the mother archetype is awakened, then I can look to awaken the divine mother. And the divine mother is not just for my own children, but it's for humanity.
Yes.
It's the divine mother to awaken the divine mother in humanity. And so like
that's, I got the goosebumps on that one.
That's the next, you know, that's the evolution, mm-hmm. you know, first we're, and it's all a micro to the macro. So we're parenting our own children, mm-hmm. but really it's every child and it's every human that we're all in this together, you know? So one thing that came before that, like a download that just came, was that when I looked at, if I felt like I wasn't acknowledged or seen or heard, I felt that was coming from an egoic place. So I would override it mm-hmm. and say, oh, okay, well, that's not important. That's nothing. And what came to me is that in the most raw and authentic core inside of us is the soul. Mm-hmm. And so when those needs in childhood were not met, that's the soul energy. Mm-hmm. How the ego formulates is that's the mental programming that comes out of mm-hmm. the soul's needs unmet. So the mental programming that comes out would be, you don't need to be seen. That's just da 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 and na 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 na. Or I want to be seen because of na na. That's the mental programming around it. So, but the if we get deeper and deeper and deeper underneath it, to the soul energy. That is the most authentic place inside our humanness.
Yeah.
Our humanness. And so if we don't get in there, there's always going to be an incongruency operating. But the mental programming around it, and sometimes it's extremely sneaky. It's extremely sneaky, and we think, oh, that's just who I am, but that's the mental programming around it. But underneath that is the soul energy.
Yep.
And so if you know, we can use Sankalpa to meet the soul needs.
Yep.
Not the egoic needs, but the soul needs.
Yep.
And the egoic needs were created, you know, around what maybe the unmet soul needs are, but they're very sneaky. So if we're using our Sankalpa to meet the ego needs, we're getting diverted from the path.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, we're going to just take longer. We're taking the scenic route now. Right. So it's about getting really clear of what is actually for the highest good for yourself and for others. The egoic needs, sometimes they might be for the highest good, but most often they're not. Mm-hmm. And they're just to secure a limited sense of I-ness. So, it's not the best use of Sankalpa, but to get really down to the, you know, like with me throwing tantrums with my son, even though on the surface that was extremely messy and it did not look pretty, and you know, it didn't, the ego absolutely did not feel good about that stage in my life, but it brought me, it shined the flashlight on actually what I needed to see. And that brought me to that whole journey of, I actually have no idea what a mother is. Mm. I have no idea what a mother is. I just didn't, like, it's like I inherited these kids and it's assumed that I know because I have kids, and it's assumed that I'm a good mother because I should know these things, but we're all coming in with our homework and our unconsciousness and a whole lineage, you know, but we're waking up. And what's really incredible is that when we are waking up to our unconscious and the shadow and the darkness, it has a ripple. And I have seen it completely affects the past generations, and I have seen it. And when I say see it, like through the intuitive space, I have seen the shifting, the ripple effect, and then it's going to have a ripple effect because my children are going to be in the presence of a different energy inside me, you know. Mm-hmm. I could tell them all the great concepts and this and that, but if I'm being my the frequency I'm living in is what they're absorbing. You know, I could yeah, tell them any words that I want, but it's the energy that I am being in. And a lot of that is like, who we're being is, it's a soup of every past experience and past energies from our lineage. So you just don't know. I mean, the best we can do is choosing, you know, we can make a choice on the Sankalpa and trust that we keep nourishing it and nurturing it every single day. Mm-hmm. That's what we can trust. Mm-hmm. That's what we trust. What we can't trust is that we know everything.
Yeah.
We cannot trust that because there's so much unconsciousness. We just trust, okay, I can choose my Sankalpa. And I understand it's most efficient and effective when the body is relaxed and the mind is quiet and there's still an awareness there. And you plant it deep inside your core or deep inside. Some people like it in the heart. Some people like it between the eyebrow space, just where there's all of your attention is focused on it. And you are aligned with it. It's not just a mental concept, but it's a sacred prayer.
That's,
you know, it's a sacred prayer.
Prayer. That's exactly.
Yeah.
That a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, Tanis, I could talk to you all day. I really could. Because it's the frequency, it's the tone, it's the language, the experience. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that you're on this planet and that I was able to find you. Seriously. And that you opened the door for me to walk through, you know, to be able to find my Sankalpa and to be able to find my path into sharing this life-changing practice, because it really is a life-changing practice. And all you have to do, ladies, is lie down. That's it. That's it. So we've gone over our time, but because I was so in love with the conversation, I just kept it going. I want to hear what, I have one more quick question that came through, and that is, do you have a specific time of day that you practice?
I would say my most sort of optimal time is, the best would be right after I wake up in the morning.
Yeah. Good. Yay. My
special time, because I am rested, mm-hmm. and I'm most awakened, mm-hmm. And the morning hours. Yeah. That's my special time, I would say, for sure.
So yeah. Good. So how do you want people to find you? Where do you want, them to go on Instagram, and do you want them sacred? Where do you want them to go?
Yeah. So I have, just if they want to connect in any way, through my website, there's, you can find the connect tab and they can send me an email.
Great.
I'm on Instagram. I don't, to be honest, like I don't use my Instagram probably as well as I should. It's like a lot of kid photos, and then, I'm just not on it as much.
Yeah, that's all right. But you're there. Yeah. But you're open.
Yeah, I'm there.
They can. Okay. So good. Yay.
Yeah. But really, on my website through the email.
Okay. Good enough.
As well. And
You guys, go check out Tanis's work. She's got, I think there's five or six up on Insight Timer. Mm-hmm. She's got some on YouTube. You can go to our site. Really, the work that she has done and put out into the world is magical, and I cannot express enough how much it has transformed my life, and I'm so grateful that you came on the show today. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Lane. Yeah, it's really, it's such a pleasure. And I'm, I never know when I do a recording. I have no idea who it's going to affect. And, I feel that if I know this practice and I've received these teachings, then I owe it.
Yeah.
I owe it. And however it lands, whoever it reaches, and whatever experience they have, it's a true blessing for myself as well. So thank you, Lane. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for reaching out and connecting and making this happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. May you find something bright, something light, and something so juicy that you may be the best you can be today. Until next time, take good care. Bye for now.
Don't forget, grab the app. Start your journey with Yoga Nidra today. Thanks for listening.